This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Karen Reed.
When the truth feels blurred under inches of snow and a mountain of doubt, the courtroom becomes the only place left to dig. In the case of Karen Reed, the prosecution claims this is a clear-cut vehicular homicide, maybe even second-degree murder, that she hit Boston police officer John O'Keefe with her SUV in a drunken haze or rage, depending on which charges you want to believe, and left him to die. The defense on the other side argues that she's not just innocent. She's the fall girl in a cover-up orchestrated to protect those inside that house. Two drastically different stories. One, a shattered taillight. No camera rolling when it all went down. Today on Hidden Killers, we're joined by former prosecutor and criminal defense attorney Eric Fannis to break down how the case is being built and unbuilt in real time. Eric, let's start with the heart of all of this. The case hinges not on someone seeing what happened, but on how jurors interpret what Karen Reed may have said, felt, or even implied in a moment of crisis. As a legal expert here, how dangerous is it when a case leans more on emotional interference than direct evidence? And is that ever enough to convict beyond a reasonable doubt?
Yeah, Tony, in nearly every case, the jury's going to be focused on what the defendant did, what the defendant said, what the defendant's demeanor was, because they believe that that will give them some insight into what the defendant knows in terms of what played out. That being said, we've always got to be cautious when a jury is considering that type of emotional evidence, because direct, hard, concrete evidence that is sound, that is solid, that's not open to misinterpretation. Whereas a human being's words and how they are emoting is.
Very, very true. And there's so many things that, like, everyone's just trying to dissect. What did Karen Reed mean by this? How did she feel at this point in time? And the trouble with that, I don't know that Karen knows how she felt at this point in time or what she said at that point in time, because she's contradicted herself so many times. And they're really starting to lay that out in court with the video clips. Are kind of accenting each witness at this time from the prosecution with, here's another clip, or a couple, like you said this here, you said that there, and none of it seems to add up. The biggest one of all, and it's the same one from the first case, did I hit him? I hit him. Could I have hit him? All of that. And the defense is really trying to steer into all of those witnesses and say, but did she actually say that? Or did you hear someone say that? And we've had some witnesses already say, yeah, I heard her say that. That's exactly what I heard as I was sitting there trying to make John O'Keefe breathe again from an EMS worker. You have others who said, I heard it from somebody else. You're going to keep hearing all the same stuff of all over the place.
Operations to combat illegal fentanyl threatening the United States.
Does it matter? I don't know what the hell that sound was. I'm thinking this might be
cocaine and other bulk illicit.
I don't know. I don't know what that was. But
I don't have any windows open.
I don't either. I just turned mine down. But anyway, continuing on. What do you think of that? With the fact that there's so many witnesses that are saying different things, or yes, I heard it, no, I didn't hear it. Does this change it? Is this just as confusing as the last time to a jury?
Think about for a second when a person was in a prior, somewhat chaotic situation. I don't know if it's, they see an altercation at a sports game or something like that, and try to, if you ask five different people what they saw and heard, you might get five different answers. Mm-hmm. These are chaotic circumstances. Recollection is imperfect. Mm-hmm. And especially when the prosecution wants to kind of hang their hat on some statement allegedly made at the scene that may have been heard correctly, may have been misheard. Mm-hmm. Those things sound kind of shaky to me. That is just not the most solid ground on which to base a conviction, in my opinion.
No, and the thing is, in interviews with Karen, she does go on to say, saying, if I did it, basically, or did I do this? There's a lot of variations that she said herself. And sometimes it's bizarre because the clips that we see from the interviews, in some sentences, she directly contradicts herself, where she's saying, basically, I said this, but I knew it was this or that. It's bizarre because it's hard to track for myself or for anyone else, and especially for a jury, where at the end of the day, it seems to come down to, I don't know that Karen knows what she said. Other people seem to have some recollection of a semblance of what she said, but does it really matter at the end of the day if she said that aloud or not?
I think that's an important question because, you know, think about the scene at the time. There's a dead police officer who is freezing, whose body is freezing out in the cold. He was allegedly in a house with a bunch of police officers. There's what some people think is sort of a disgruntled partner. This is a chaotic scenario. And so, you know, even if someone said at the scene, I hit him, did I hit him? I mean, it would be difficult for Kara Reid to even know whether, you know, conclusively, whether she did actually hit him if the impact was alleged to be on the back of the vehicle, which it was. And so, you know, for someone who's just uttering what is coming to mind in this chaotic, emotionally charged situation, sometimes that can ring true. Sometimes that can be the most true statement there is. Other times that can be just sort of a garbled, confused expression that comes out of a person under really chaotic circumstances.
Yeah, and I can honestly see it either way. I don't know that it has a whole lot of meaning other than somebody trying to figure out what just happened. The shocking part is when it sways the other way eventually of like, that's impossible, that couldn't have happened, where no, it's very plausible. It could have happened. We don't know for sure, but it's at least plausible, where Karen goes back and forth on that. Another point that they were making early on in the prosecution is the fact that she was hospitalized for a psychiatric evaluation that morning while they were recovering John O'Keefe and looking at that crime scene. The prosecution trying to use it as indirect evidence of guilt. But in your experience, you know, how cautious should juries be about interpreting raw emotion as an indicator of criminal responsibility? The fact that she was taken out to a psychiatric ward, I would think even if you didn't do this and you find out your partner is dead on the ground, even if you're in a rocky situation, you would, I don't know, I'd probably be needing to go to a psych ward too.
Tony, that's the thing, is that this psychiatric evaluation that happened after the incident, it's equally plausible that that could show a person who is, you know, guilt-ridden and beside themselves for what they've done, or a person who is confused and befuddled by mm-hmm. what has gone on and their partner is deceased now. And so I think the prosecution needs to be careful with how they try to play this, because I think a juror might get offended by an argument by the prosecution that, oh, she needed therapeutic care after this, therefore that means she did it. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean she did it.
Well, there's so much of that where it's evidence of guilt. And I get that does exist. But do you feel, in your opinion thus far, are they playing that card too strong where, see, this shows evidence of guilt? They're not like outright saying that. They're kind of letting the jury let it land and let them kind of simmer on it and figure it out. But you can tell that's a lot of the direction they're going, again, because a lot of this is circumstantial. Are they playing that hand too hard so far?
Sort of the insinuation seems to be something close to kind of stigmatizing a person seeking mental health. Mm-hmm. You know, if a person needs some help, especially under such dire, oppressive circumstances, that's, you know, holding that against them at a criminal trial in mm-hmm. a death case, I just really think a jury might be rubbed the wrong way by that. And the prosecution, it's not the strongest evidence. It could be interpreted multiple ways. And so I think the prosecution should focus on some of the other evidence that would be more sound and that comports with sort of the objective reality and investigation analysis that took place after the incident.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.